Doc is jumping on with us. He'll be on with Chris starting at 1 o'clock today. And we talked about at the end of the show yesterday, very sad news. Butch McAdams, Coach McAdams, who's been a longtime guest on all of the shows that Doc's been involved in on the station over the years. He was a dedicated head basketball coach and teacher at Murray for 31 years. A basketball historian. I loved when he would come on with Coach and with Doc and with Brian or Al or anybody else to talk about hoops and the area, because this area really is at its core. It has always been this way, a basketball town. But Coach McAdams passed away suddenly over the weekend, and Doc's been close to him for so long. I know it's heartbreaking for you and so many people. Just your thoughts about Coach McAdams.
Well, just privileged to have had the connection. And thanks to Coach Thompson and all of really the tradition of D.C. basketball and G in the Shop and all the guys who, you know, we joke and play a lot, but it's real. And I've just been so lucky because of Glenn Harris and Ron Harris and, you know, covering with George Michael, covering UDC, Will Jones.
Right.
One of my second assignment at WRC. And because my old buddy and business partner, Ray Bledsoe, I was indoctrinated into the district. And so when John would talk about Boys Club number 2, I'd actually been there and was privy to it. And then having done business in the district and because of Marion Barry, understanding the vibe in D.C. and how unique it is and its roots, and a guy like Butch, who was a historian, and then his work on radio and his shows. And if you've covered D.C. IAA high school sports, and you understand how big basketball is in some of those games back in the day, you know, you've been there at these high school games that are incredible. And back in the day, you know, when Lefty and John and Gary, and how big and basketball all the way across the board at GW with Jarvis, and we know what's happened at Mason. We know what the DNA is of the DMV. And as much as we, those of us that have lived long enough to remember when the Burgundy and Gold meant something substantial in terms of winning, this was hoops, bedrock. And the sudden part about this is the brother, he was on a roll, giving out, like he said, you know, for non-wagering, he was trying to give a disclaimer, but he knew he was helping people make money. And, you know, and he was on a roll with his predictions. We were trying to do a little bit of a Sheehan move and helping people make money. And Denton was on a tear throughout the playoffs. And it was just like, and because of Sunday, because he had his own show on Sunday at OL and what he's been doing. And I said, well, Coach, this week the draft is Wednesday, and Zion is actually, Willingham is hosting 106.7 and 980 is hosting the draft the number 2 pick with the Wizards. And so I was thinking, man, Saturday is going to be a blockbuster, because I was going to ask Zion Willingham to join Butch and really just go Wizards heavy. And now we'll just have to do it in his honor. And I'm just thinking about how Coach Thompson and all of them up there just having a ball, talking hoops.
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine.
Right.
The left-hander. I mean, all of them that are up there, man. That would be a conversation for the ages.
Yeah, it would be. Like, I'm sure you know this. Today, Maryland and Georgetown announced they're going to play each other for four years starting in 2025, something you and I have been talking about, and we've all been talking about forever.
I didn't hear
he wanted that, right?
All of them. Who doesn't want it?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody.
Well, Coach didn't want it for a long time.
Well, Coach, but you know, Coach, Coach, man, and you know, Coach and Lefty and the relationship they had, and how he revered Lefty and understood how Lefty was such a brilliant marketing guy. And so everybody learned from it. We're always at our best when we're really good. And what, you know, with Catholic, when Catholic's hot, and with we all know what has happened in this area on every level, high school all the way up through to the Bullets. But, you know, we'll see. I just don't have details. I understand he passed away in his sleep. I was talking to Essek, who engineered on Friday, and he indicated to me that he detected Coach might have been off a little bit. I did not. I didn't know, but, you know, Essek is a genius. But I didn't, you know, because he could pick up. I didn't pick that up. I mean, what got me was that there was no hint. It's not like his shortness of breath. Coach, you okay? Coach was energetic. You know, a year ago he got inducted into the D.C., in the Hall of Fame at Congressional, and that was a heck of an honor. And it's just one of those things, man. It's like, what do you do other than celebrate the good times with him? And the outpour from people in the community has been great, and I anticipate that it'll be quite a volume of outreach over the next week.
When he would be on with you guys, his memory of games and coaches and players from the area. I remember sometimes he'd be on talking about some guy that played for, you know, his alma mater, Mackin, but then started talking about when he was in eighth grade and he was at some middle school.
He remembered G from the shop. He remembered G's.
I know.
Bats.
Yeah, he remembers G. He remembered G being a really good player.
Oh, no, G had game.
Yeah, I know he did.
G had game, and he remembered those things. I mean, these coaches have memories like elephants. I mean, but the thing is, like when John, we'd sit around here, coach, talk about Arback and how they'd be up in the stands. They're gym rats. That's what I was trying to talk about Jerry West. Jerry would be in the stands at the men's gym at UCLA. And that's where most of the games were. And you could see these guys in the stands. That wasn't torture to them. That was ecstasy. They go love going seeing guys play basketball. You know how it is, man. Going to watch a good run, you know, at Cole or McDonough.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like people say, hey, you want to go to a party? You want to go to the movies? You want to go watch a run? I'm going to the run. I mean, that was normal. It was called, and it wasn't torture. It was like pleasure. These are the guys that we have. And we got to look, these people are just as dedicated now. It's just they have different access now. They can see things on a phone. They don't have to travel to it and go. We had no other. To see it, we had to actually be there. That was different.
Yeah. I mean, it's just different. I mean, you know, there are scheduled play dates for young kids now. There was no scheduled play dates for anybody back in your day or even my day. It was, here's a ball, be home by dinner.
Did you have
go
lights
figure
on
it
out here? We had lights. Our whole thing, we were raised off, you better have your behind on our property when the lights cut on. The lights do that on the East Coast? West Coast, lights came on at a certain time, maybe seven.
Oh, yeah, okay. they were timed. They were sent. Yeah, yes.
So you were raised on that. Have your behind in that yard when them lights come on, or you are going to be in a world of trouble. That's amazing how everybody be sprinting trying to get back to be on your property, not in the house, but you had to be on that lawn. That's amazing.
Yeah.
No,
well,
Butch will be missed, man. I just never seen anybody as passionate. He'd be like, what's the angle? And he was so righteous, and their disappointment obviously is always with the pro product, which his last statements was that, say, how far are we away? He said, 3 years. I said, well, how many players do you have that can go, one or two? He never bought into. He said, look, man, to win, we have to change. First of all, we got to defend, and we have to have people that defend first, have length. They can get to the basket and shoot threes. And you just don't have that makeup. You can maybe have one or two guys that will be here. When they're good, you'll have maybe one or two players that are currently on your team today. Wow.
So sad. And so sudden, and so obviously, you know, I was thinking about you when I heard the news yesterday before the show, and a lot of other people who really were impacted by this guy. Look, he was a coach for 31 years. He was a teacher for over 31 years. The number of lives, you know, he impacted and touched are countless. So sympathies certainly to all of his family.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate it. And, it, you know, we joke a lot about it, but when you go to the supermarket, you know, the last time you coached, those kids now are driving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey, coach. And they're driving to the supermarket before their parents would put them in the shopping cart, you know, and now they're driving because it happens to me. I mean, and I know how much you value it because I value it. There's only a couple of hundred kids on this earth. But when they come up and they see you and say, hey, coach, there's nothing that brings more warmth to me than that because you put in that season with them, you know, and they appreciate the time invested in them. And the return on them is just them not being a jackass. And if just comp is that, and they play hard. That's all you ask for. And so when we get to watch the byproducts of a Game 7 that we saw last night in hockey, or for me, man, that College World Series and watching the Volunteers, seeing it come out at the end, and it's such a hard way to get to that mountaintop. But seeing that is – and look, I watched from –
Are you going to break down the hockey today?
I can't break it down, but I can break down what I saw – Uh-huh. Just like you. I mean, at least I was all in, and I topped you because I watched Chicago, Indiana from tip to gun and enjoyed the heck out of it. And Reese went to me, she went from Rodman to Barkley because she was always Dennis Rodman to me, and I ain't mad at her. Love her dirty work. But now that she scores, show me what you can do.
That wasn't last night. You're going back a couple nights ago.
2 nights ago.
Yeah.
But it was WNBA. And I mean, from its entirety.
I know.
And
we're all watching a little bit more of it.
No, you were right. But no, I'm not doing it as being tortured. I'm not at gunpoint. I'm like appointment and enjoyed it to the end. Indiana gave it away. And I'll tell you what. If these poor girls could catch Caitlin's passes.
Right.
She'd have
20 assists a game.
20 a game. She's Irvin, Magic Johnson, or Larry Bird with her passes, but they can't handle it. They cannot handle it, and that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Hey, man, thank you for allowing me on the number one radio show in the world. I really appreciate it.
All right.
And could you do me a favor?
I'm looking forward to Chris's breakdown of the hockey game and your insightful questions for Chris.
Well, I'm like Denton. You know, I get about as much airtime as Denton does with you.
See ya. Okay, so wait. Sorry about
no,
Coach.
No, thank you. Thanks for the
I'll
time.
Talk to you.
And Denton,
right.
Keep up the good work, man. Your patience is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's so patient. He's treated so poorly.
He is.
Yeah,
he is.
Okay.
And you know it, too.
Oh,
that's
stop
why you're a tyrant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's me. I will talk to you later. See ya. Doc Walker, everybody. Right now, get bonus days to save with Window Nation here, Washington, D.C. They have extended their semi-annual sale through the end of the month. That's June 30th. You can get quality, affordable windows, and it's a big deal. They've extended their sale, which gives you 50% off all windows and window styles, along with 0% interest for 5 years. Plus, when you schedule your estimate now, mention my name, you'll get a bonus 10% off. So that's 60% off your purchase. If you've got older windows, if they're rotted, if they're broken, if they're hard to open or hard to close, and you're tired of paying high air conditioning bills in the summer, high heating bills in the winter, it's time that you change your windows. I would urge you to give Window Nation a shot. First of all, their estimate is free. You've got no risk. They'll leave you with a quote. You can do with it what you choose. You can shop it. They're not going to pressure you into it. But their maintenance-free windows right now are going to fix all the problems you're currently having with your windows for decades to come. Some wood windows are made from waste materials like wood fibers. Why would you want that for your home? Window Nation's top quality vinyl does not bow in the sun. They're designed with premium insulation, and they come with a lifetime warranty. Put an end to your window worries. Hurry. The sale ends on June 30th, so schedule a fast, no-obligation, in-home estimate with the pros at Window Nation. Don't miss your chance to save. Call them right now, 866-90-NATION, or head to windownation.com and mention that Kevin Sheehan sent you. So the big news locally here today is the announcement by both Maryland and Georgetown that they will resume a basketball series against one another, playing in a four-year scheduled run from 2025 through 2028, starting at Xfinity Center in 2025. Then it goes to Capital One in 26, back to College Park in 27, and then back in Capital One Arena in 2028. Maryland and Georgetown haven't had this many scheduled games since the 1970s in terms of years in a row. Most of you are familiar with kind of the Cold War rivalry that didn't get played for many, many years. And the reasons for it, you know, they both blamed each other. John Thompson and Lefty Driesell did, and then Gary Williams and John Thompson blamed each other. But the bottom line is Ed Cooley and Kevin Willard are friends. Mark Turgeon and JT3 were friends, and they're going to the kind of promise that they would attempt to play this when Ed Cooley got hired at Georgetown, and it looks like it will happen. A lot of stories being written about this, and I saw this quote, which I'd forgotten. It's in the ESPN.com story, which is on their front page right now at ESPN.com. Myron Metcalf wrote the story about the rivalry resuming after so many years. But when they decided to play in 2015 as part of the Gavitt Games and in 2016, the first game was at Maryland. And Coach Thompson, whose son, JT3, was coaching Georgetown and decided to play these two games against Mark Turgeon's Maryland team, Big John said, quote, "I'm not going over there to play no Maryland at Maryland. John's mother must have been advising him. I know it damn sure wasn't me to say he's going to go over there and play Maryland at Maryland," closed quote. Yeah, he was not in favor of this when they played back-to-back years in 2015-2016, and certainly was not in favor of playing a game in College Park. And they played that game in 2015, national televised audience. I mean, it was hard to get a ticket to that game. It was in November. Packed arena, unbelievable atmosphere, a good game. Maryland was actually that year preseason number two in the country, and they beat Georgetown in a close game. And then the next year at Capital One Arena, Maryland won that game too. They were down nine with like 2.5 minutes to go, came back. Anthony Cowan was a freshman, had a couple of steals, big free throws down the stretch. But yeah, Big John never, ever wanted this game. And when Patrick replaced JT3, that pretty much closed off any chance of Maryland and Georgetown playing, you know, regularly. But Kevin Willard, Ed Cooley, Big East foes, but Big East friends, coaching in the same town now. They promised to try to make this work, and it looks like they are going to play regularly for a four-year stretch, and hopefully that's just the beginning, because from essentially the early 1900s through 1980, they played on a regular basis as the two big programs in town, and then in 1980, it ended. And we've been through the stories a lot, but John and Lefty got into it at the Armory in December of 1979, the 79-80 season. Maryland lost that game. They played later that year in the Sweet 16 in Philadelphia. Maryland lost that game as well. And at that point, Georgetown had beaten Maryland back-to-back games in the same season, including in the NCAA tournament for the first time. And they cut it off. Georgetown cut it off, and that was it. And they didn't play again until Georgetown got paid big money to play Maryland in a made-for-TV Thanksgiving weekend game in 1993. Gary played that game. They were coming off probation. They won it. They played in the Sweet 16 in 2001. That was Maryland's run to the Final Four. That was not their national championship year. That was, they beat Georgetown in the Sweet 16 in Anaheim, then beat Stanford in the Elite Eight to go to the Final Four, ended up losing to Duke and blowing a 22-point lead in Minneapolis in that game. But they beat Georgetown in the Sweet 16. And then they played accidentally in a loser's bracket in a tournament in Orlando in 2008, you know, over the Thanksgiving Day holiday, and Georgetown won that game, but then Maryland won the two Gavitt games that were scheduled in 2015 and 2016. But starting next season, not this upcoming season, but next season, Maryland and Georgetown. And again, I talked about this earlier in the show. It's very important, Maryland and Georgetown. Hopefully you're listening. You do not, no matter what the TV deal is, you cannot schedule that game on a Sunday during football season. Ravens fans, Washington football team fans just are not going to put aside a Sunday of football for a college basketball game that time of year, no matter who's playing. That game's got to be played on a non-NFL day. My recommendation is they try to get a TV, national TV deal that Saturday of Army, Navy, and the Heisman Trophy presentation. You know, and you play that on a late Saturday afternoon or a Saturday night, you know, in each of the two locations. Maybe you play it on a Friday night, but you do not and you can't anymore. You know, you're not what you used to be, Maryland and Georgetown. You're just not. This has become a pro sports town, much more so than it ever was. There was a time when you could make the argument that Maryland basketball, when good, was the number two passionately followed team in this town after the football team. There was a time you could have said Georgetown was way up there when they were good. That's no longer the case. Okay, this has become a pro sports town with four professional sports teams, which we didn't always have, you know, until 2005, 2006 when baseball came back. Don't try to take the big TV deal to play a 1 o'clock Sunday game in December on, you know, FS1. Don't do that. You gotta pick the right date and the right time. Your TV deal, you will. And also, one other recommendation, when you're playing at Capital One or at Xfinity Center, don't start the game at 6:30 on a weeknight. Please. I'll handle the scheduling of this. Bring me in to the television negotiations and the date time, and I'll help you out on this one. I remember the game in 2016 at Capital One, because the game was on, Big East was FS1, and that game was on FS1. It started at 6:30, Denton. Look, the game was sold out, but the first half, you know, people weren't in their seats until about 4 minutes to go in the first half. Second half was awesome, but in this town, trying to get downtown or trying to get somewhere on the Beltway like College Park, on a weeknight for a 6:30 or a 7 o'clock start, forget it. The game in College Park, I'm pretty sure, was a 9 o'clock start. May have been an 8 o'clock start back in 2015. I wanted to play something that was more positive about the Commanders' upcoming season, because we talked earlier, some of the power rankings are coming out. Yahoo's got them 29th. Pro Football Talk's got them 29th. ESPN's roster rankings, which came out this morning, have them as the 30th best roster in the league. But there was, you know, actual optimism about the team. This was Rich Eisen and Daniel Jeremiah on Rich Eisen's show for the NFL Network, or may have been his podcast, talking about Washington as a top five team in the league, most likely to break out in 2024.
And man, Washington, in my estimation, I was talking about it again the other day when Chris had them 31st on his ranking of the top teams or the bottom 10. He had them second to last. And Jaden Daniels, I can't wait to see what he looks like. But I mean, Terry McLaurin, Eckler, Brian Robinson Jr., Jahan Dotson, you know, Cliff Kingsbury dialing it up. That's they have weapons there, man. They can really light it up potentially.
Yeah, they've got some weapons there. Offensive line wise, they've got bodies to fill all those holes. That's my one, you know, let's wait and see. I do have some, you know, some reservations there. Let's see what that offensive line looks like. But the other side of it, Rich, and this is not even player driven, more coach driven. When was the last time you saw a Dan Quinn defense that didn't, like, you know, punch above its weight, that the sum is not greater than the parts, that they're not going to be playing with the hair on fire, playing so hard and really squeezing every drop of talent they can out of that group? I think he's going to get more out of that defense than people are expecting.
Now, I know that, and Bobby Wagner's there now, obviously, and I know that was a rhetorical question, and TJ Jefferson's going to think I'm taking a shot at him. The last time I saw that out of a Dan Quinn defense was the last game he coordinated for the Dallas Cowboys, to be very honest with you. You know, I mean...
Yeah. Other than the 48 points that they gave up to the Packers, I think there was a defensive touchdown in there somewhere. But the 40 plus points and 400 plus yards or whatever it was, Dan Quinn's defenses have been pretty good. And that is true. That is, for me, again, I don't see this team being at the bottom of the barrel of the upcoming season. But I didn't see it last year either. I mean, it's the NFL. Anything can happen. I mean, if Jaden Daniels really does struggle as a rookie, I could certainly see that leading to another really rough season, because I don't know that they would pull him, you know, after starting him at the beginning of the season to put in Marcus Mariota, and that's not going to be the answer either. But I think defensively, you got to count on a much better football team in 2024. I think the personnel might be better, but like Jeremiah said, I think it's just, not only do you have a defensive head coach who's had success everywhere he's gone in coaching defense and a hell of a staff, you've improved the talent. But look, last year you went from number 9 overall in defensive DVOA to number 31 in one season. Why? It wasn't necessarily talent, and it wasn't necessarily the coaching potential. It was that the staff was in a lame duck season, and it checked out pretty early, maybe even heading into it. I know that they would never, ever admit that, but there was a general feeling of there are big changes coming. And the only way we can afford, the only way we stick around is basically to win 12 games, 11 games, and win a playoff game or two. And that wasn't going to happen with that group. I think the defense will be much improved. And I think this team's, you know, power ranking right now is a little bit exaggerated, but it's not, you know, it's not undeserving. They were a terrible 4-13 football team last year, and you're going to be starting a rookie quarterback. And typically, that means up and down at best. So I understand that. They've got to earn, you know, respect from around the league. But we've seen these things before, these power rankings. You know who was 31 last year in most power rankings, or 30 or 29? Houston was. Nobody knows anything about the NFL, except for Michael Phillips. He'll join us next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Big local news of the day, Maryland and Georgetown announcing that they are back. The two teams announced a four-game series that will be starting in 2025-2026. The first game will be in the fall of 2025 at College Park, then back to Georgetown, back to Maryland, and so on and so forth. In Major League Baseball, Nationals lose to the Padres 7-6 in 10 innings. They're back tonight at 9:40. You can hear it on 106.7 The Fan. Mackenzie Gore on the mound for the Nationals. Last night in the Stanley Cup Final, the Panthers, they overcome the blowing of the 3-0 lead to win it in Game 7. Sam Reinhardt scored the go-ahead goal in the second period. Connor McDavid becomes the sixth player in NHL history to win the Conn Smythe on the losing team. In the College World Series, Tennessee beats Texas A&M 6-5 to win the College World Series and become the first number one seed since Miami in 1999 to win the College World Series. And that's what's trending.
Michael Phillips is a radio guy, but he's something else now, too, which we'll get to here momentarily. But Michael Phillips, of course, long time on the beat in Richmond covering the football team, has been hosting 10 to noon on weekdays on 910 The Fan. And he'll tell us about his new venture. You can follow Michael on X on Twitter at Michael P in RVA. We'll talk football team here, of course, the Commanders coming up. But you had mentioned to me when we talked, I think last week or the week before, that you had a new exciting gig that you were about to announce. So tell everybody what Michael Phillips will be doing in addition, I'm assuming, in addition to the radio show.
You assume correctly. Thanks for having me. And this started with, I worked at the newspaper for 16 years, and a lot of people lament the way the newspaper's going, and not just in Richmond, but all across America, that it's a declining industry. And I'm part of a group that's going to do something about it. So it's called the Richmonder. It's online. It's at richmonder.org. We're a nonprofit. We're kind of just focused on reporting about Richmond and the Richmond area. And so I've not spent a lot of time in the non-sports part of the world, but I think it's really important that we continue to keep the lights on in terms of, you know, offering people stories about their community and what's going on. And we'll certainly have a lot of sports, and I'll keep writing sports. But I'm excited to be a part of this. If you're interested in the Richmond area and the things going on there, richmonder.org, I could talk all day about the state of journalism and kind of our place in that. But I'm really excited for this business model in particular.
Well, good for you. But what you're saying is you won't be writing sports for the Richmonder.
I will write some sports occasionally, but I'll be doing news writing as well. I'll be writing about the community as well, and I'll still write a little bit about the Commanders that we'll put on the Odyssey website here. So I'll keep myself in the sports world. Keep a foot in there, probably half my body in there. But the main thing here is, you know, a community news. Who are the people you need to know? Who's doing cool things? How are they spending your tax dollars? A lot of those stories are going untold right now in Richmond.
I'm curious about something, and you may or may not have the answer. What percentage of, let's just say, the top 10 newspapers in America are now subscriber-based?
Yeah, so your top four are Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, and the USA Today conglomerate, which is a lot of smaller ones that kind of operate under that umbrella now. I think 100% of them are subscriber-based now in terms of where there's more money in subscribers than advertising. And a lot of it, I mean, you think about how we made money forever. We sold classifieds, and we sold movie advertisements. You know, if you had a movie coming out, you had to buy an ad in the paper to tell people what time it was going to show and get them excited about the movie. Like, we haven't sold a movie ad in decades, and we haven't sold a classified ad in forever either. You know, it's a small percentage of the revenue now. And you think about, you know, the big Thanksgiving paper with all the ads stuffed in, and it's just not where the money's coming from now. So I think you're seeing both, you know, a lot more advertising or subscription-supported stuff, but also with the nonprofit, it's kind of a swallow-your-pride moment for journalists, right? We always operate with this swagger, and we're the most important people in the room. But it's an acknowledgement that to go to city council and to go to the school board meeting is something that the private market's not going to prop up on its own. And it's going to take a different business model to get there.
Are there any of the major newspapers? So what you said, Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, and the USA Today conglomerate. So the LA Times isn't bigger than the USA Today?
No, and they were bought a few years ago by a private businessman there who was going to grow them real big, and that failed. The biggest one that's still free is the New York Post in New York. That's the biggest one that hasn't opened that vault.
I was going to ask you, are any of them not printed anymore? I don't I don't think any of the big ones aren't printed anymore, right?
Yeah.
There's still a print edition.
There's still a print edition everywhere. So in Virginia, there, you know, the conglomerate I worked for, Lee Enterprises, owned, I think, 17 newspapers across the state. You know, you think about Roanoke, Charlottesville, Waynesboro, all those places. A lot of them have gone to 3 days a week, not Richmond. Richmond's still every day, but a 3 day a week model. I know I get the Washington Post on Sunday only, you know, that kind of occasional as opposed to every day.
And do you know the answer to this? I'm just curious because I am a subscriber to the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. Those are the two papers that I pay for. I don't even know what I pay a month. Do I pay $9.95 a month? Something like it might be less than that. But isn't that awful? By the way, I think a lot of people are in the same boat. You like get your credit card statement. You're like,
yep.
What am I paying for this? And by the way, yep. How many things you're paying for that you didn't even know you were paying for? But what does the Post have as in terms of a number of paid subscribers? Do you know that?
I don't know their number, and I don't know if they've shared their number. I know at one point it was a million. I think that was kind of the peak of the Trump, running for president the first time era, and then his administration. I know they've shrunk a little bit since then in terms of their paid subscribership, but I want to say they were over a million digital at one point.
Interesting. You know, the other thing, as it relates to you, in print, is that, you know, sports in print has changed so much. I mean, the New York Times did away with their sports section, and then they acquired The Athletic about a year ago, year and a half ago at this point, whatever it was. Sports sections in newspapers, what is the state of that?
Well, what really hurts them is the deadlines that a lot of newspapers now, sure, they start printing them late afternoon. And so, the Stanley Cup's probably not in the bulk of American newspapers this morning. And it's tough to stay relevant when, you know, the main thing everybody's talking about isn't in the newspaper the next day. It's still a tremendous driver of readership and interest. And yeah, at the Richmond, we'll still have sports stories and particularly, people love high school sports stories and community sports stories, and college sports is as big as ever. It's got its problems right now, but it's certainly
is that more in markets like Richmond versus a D.C. or a Philly or New York?
Yeah, I know you do a lot of Terp stuff, but I think you would say on the whole, the Post is probably more emphasized national sports stories as opposed to like. They may have had a full-time Georgetown person a few years ago. I don't want to speak to their situation, but I think, you know, they're more in how do we tell an interesting national story right now as opposed to how do we make sure to get to every George Mason basketball game.
Right. All right. Well, congratulations on your new gig. Best of luck. TheRichmonder.org. You can link to it by just following Michael on X at Michael P. in RVA. All right, let's talk some football team. And, you know, this is the time of year. There's lists, there's rankings, there's, you know, all this stuff coming out.
Yep.
But let me just ask you specifically your view on if Brandon Ayuk, and Adam Schefter yesterday reported that Washington and San Francisco had discussions. Washington decided not to, you know, move forward with a deal. But what is your view of if Brandon Ayuk were available, should Washington be interested?
Well, I think Washington should be interested in that. I think the best thing you can do for Jaden Daniels is give him as many weapons and as many playmakers as possible. I don't think you can over accommodate a rookie quarterback in terms of, you know, getting him comfortable and getting him players he likes. I don't think the 49ers should be interested in a deal. You look at the 49ers, that's a team that's on the verge of a Super Bowl, and winning a Super Bowl, that's their only goal. What's better, having Brandon Ayuk for a year or a draft pick you have to wait an entire year to make? Unless they said send us Terry or something like that, I guess I'm just missing how the 49ers would stand to benefit by losing talent in an all-in year.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That's why I keep coming back to, there's no way they're trading a guy that is going to be a big part of another Super Bowl run. he was last year and he would be this year. You're for what, a compensatory third rounder if you lose him in free agency, that would be if you lost him in free agency. But for a second rounder or a second and a fifth, no. You don't do that if you're the Niners. I guess the issue would be if he made it super uncomfortable for them. You know, when you get to training camp and he's a legitimate holdout. But we know that it just doesn't pay to be a holdout as a player in the NFL anymore. It gets incredibly expensive.
Chris Jones can vouch for that, right? They gave him that moral win of, like, we restructured his contract, but he ended up losing money off of that holdout. He did not win the holdout by any stretch. He missed some training camp, I guess, whatever that's worth to him. But in terms of actual financial impact, if you skip training camp, it adds up quickly, and it would add up quickly for Brandon Ayuk. And especially given how good that team's going to be, if he wanted out of Carolina or something like that, you know, maybe, you know, you've got a little more leverage, but have a great year. Go to another Super Bowl, go to another NFC Championship game, and the market will be there for you. I think that the path to him getting paid is pretty simple, and it starts with him dominating.
So I asked Ben this yesterday. We're being joined, of course, by Michael Phillips. That, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but I haven't read one even mild criticism of Jaden Daniels in this offseason, right? You know, we've heard Gerard Mayo say about Drake May, long way to go. We heard some Caleb Williams struggles early on. Everything has been so complimentary, if not over the top complimentary. I mean, you know, Lewis Riddick went nuts the other day. I mean, I was reading some of the quotes from over the weekend on yesterday's show. And to me, that is coming from either the front office and the coaching staff because they want to get people excited about Jaden Daniels, which I would not love personally, or it's just that he really is this good. And people can't contain themselves, because it's coming from players too. Terry was on with Scott the other night on SportsCenter, and you know he was talking about how incredibly mature and talented he is. Which of the two is it? Is it that we're hearing nothing but good because he really is all that, or it's because he's good, but they are trying to get everybody pumped up and, by the way, buy some tickets to games next year?
No, I think it's genuine. I mean, you look at the last Jaden negative story would have been the Topgolf story, right, with the agent.
Yeah, before the draft.
And certainly pre-draft, things are always said, and there's always those stories. Post-draft, I agree with you. It's all been positive. But, I mean, this is not a market and a situation where people hold back. You remember the year where everybody's going to pump Robert up with positivity to – help him through it, and that lasted for like a minute and a half, until kind of the truth started coming out. I think this is a market where that's very hard to pull off. I think it's genuine. I think people really like what they've seen from the kid so far. I don't know how much that will translate on the field this year, but I know he's made a lot of friends in the building.
I agree with you, by the way. I just want to make that clear. I think that, and I'm a huge fan and was pre-draft and all season long, and want to be right about him, like we all want to be right about him. But I think it's genuine as well. So on this football team right now on June 25th, is there anything that you are confident that it will be in 2024? Like anything, a player, a position group, something related to the staff? Is there anything that you feel really good about?
I feel really good about the running backs. I think Austin Ekeler was a great addition for what they're doing right now, which is not breaking the bank, but bringing in talent. I like Brian Robinson a lot. I think that's a strong position. On defense, I love the tackles. I'm very confident in the tackles, whether or not Johnny Newton plays. I think Fedarian Mathis is a very capable NFL number three, so you got three good ones right there. I feel really good that the linebacking play will improve. I may not be out on a limb there, though, Kevin, because it was so bad last year. I've bought myself a big area to land in on that leap, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and my thing has been just that they're going to be improved on defense, but that's not much of a leap because it would be hard for them to be any worse. Back to sort of, you know, the lists and the rankings time of the year. I mean, Pro Football Talk had them 29th. Yahoo had them 29th in their preseason power rankings. ESPN just came out ranking the rosters. They had it 30th. Do you have a reaction to that? I mean, first of all, there's two ways to look at it, right? You know, do you think they've earned that for the moment, but do you think that they'll end up being that?
I think the roster being ranked in that spot is fair because of what everybody put on tape last year, right? Like, you and I can talk, and I do believe this, that Benjamin St. Juice will take a step forward this year, and, you know, name your guy, he'll do better this year. But if you're a national guy, you're not looking at glass half full scenarios for everybody. You're saying, what did they put on tape last year when I evaluate this team? And it's bad. It's tough to watch.
Michael Phillips is a radio guy, but he's something else now too, which we'll get to here momentarily. But Michael Phillips, of course, long time on the beat in Richmond covering the football team, has been hosting 10 to noon on weekdays on 910 The Fan, and he'll tell us about his new venture. You can follow Michael on X on Twitter at Michael P in RVA. We'll talk football team here, of course, the Commanders coming up. But you had mentioned to me when we talked, I think last week or the week before, that you had a new exciting gig that you were about to announce. So tell everybody what Michael Phillips will be doing in addition, I'm assuming, in addition to the radio show.
You assume correctly. Thanks for having me. And this started with, I worked at the newspaper for 16 years, and a lot of people lament the way the newspaper's going, and not just in Richmond, but all across America, that it's a declining industry. And I'm part of a group that's going to do something about it. So it's called the Richmonder. It's online. It's at richmonder.org. We're a nonprofit. We're kind of just focused on reporting about Richmond and the Richmond area. And so I've not spent a lot of time in the non-sports part of the world, but I think it's really important that we continue to keep the lights on in terms of, you know, offering people stories about their community and what's going on. And we'll certainly have a lot of sports, and I'll keep writing sports. But I'm excited to be a part of this. If you're interested in the Richmond area and the things going on there, richmonder.org, you know, I could talk all day about the state of journalism and kind of our place in that. But I'm really excited for this business model in particular.
Well, good for you. But what you're saying is you won't be writing sports for the Richmonder.
I will write some sports occasionally, but I'll be doing news writing as well. I'll be writing about the community as well, and I'll still write a little bit about the Commanders that we'll put on the Odyssey website here. So I'll keep myself in the sports world. Keep a foot in there, probably half my body in there. But the main thing here is, you know, a community news. Who are the people you need to know? Who's doing cool things? How are they spending your tax dollars? A lot of those stories are going untold right now in Richmond.
I'm curious about something, and you may or may not have the answer. What percentage of, let's just say, the top 10 newspapers in America are now subscriber-based?
Yeah, so your top four are Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, and the USA Today conglomerate, which is a lot of smaller ones that kind of operate under that umbrella now. I think 100% of them are subscriber-based now, in terms of where there's more money in subscribers than advertising. And a lot of it, I mean, you think about how we made money forever. We sold classifieds, and we sold movie advertisements. You know, if you had a movie coming out, you had to buy an ad in the paper to tell people what time it was going to show and get them excited about the movie. Like, we haven't sold a movie ad in decades, and we haven't sold a classified ad in forever either. You know, it's a small percentage of the revenue now. And you think about, you know, the big Thanksgiving paper with all the ads stuffed in, and it's just not where the money's coming from now. So I think you're seeing both, you know, a lot more advertising or subscription-supported stuff, but also with the nonprofit, it's kind of a swallow-your-pride moment for journalists, right? We always operate with this swagger, and we're the most important people in the room. But it's an acknowledgement that to go – to go to city council and to go to the school board meeting is something that the private market's not going to prop up on its own, and it's going to take a different business model to get there.
Are there any of the major newspapers, so what you said, Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, and the USA Today conglomerate, so the LA Times isn't bigger than the USA Today?
No, and they were bought a few years ago by a private businessman there who's going to grow them real big, and that failed. The biggest one that's still free is the New York Post in New York. That's the biggest one that hasn't opened that vault.
I was going to ask you, are any of them not printed anymore? I don't think any of the big ones aren't printed anymore, right?
Yeah,
there's still a print edition.
There's still a print edition everywhere. So in Virginia, the conglomerate I worked for, Lee Enterprises, owned, I think, 17 newspapers across the state. You think about Roanoke, Charlottesville, Waynesboro, all those places. A lot of them have gone to 3 days a week, not Richmond. Richmond's still every day, but a 3-day-a-week model. I know I get the Washington Post on Sunday only, that kind of occasional as opposed to every day.
And do you know the answer to this? I'm just curious because I'm a subscriber to the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. Those are the two papers that I pay for. I don't even know what I pay a month. Do I pay $9.95 a month? Something like it might be less than that. But isn't that awful? By the way, I think a lot of people are in the same boat. You like get your credit card statement. You're like,
yep.
What am I paying for this? And by the way, how many things you're paying for that you didn't even know you were paying for? But what does the Post have as in terms of a number of paid subscribers? Do you know that?
I don't know their number, and I don't know if they've shared their number. I know at one point it was a million. I think that was kind of the peak of the Trump, running for president the first time era, and then his administration. I know they've shrunk a little bit since then in terms of their paid subscribership, but I want to say they were over a million digital at one point.
Interesting. You know, the other thing, as it relates to you, in print, is that, sports in print has changed so much. I mean, the New York Times did away with their sports section, and then they acquired The Athletic about a year ago, year and a half ago at this point, whatever it was. Sports sections in newspapers, what is the state of that?
Well, what really hurts them is the deadlines that a lot of newspapers now, they start printing them late afternoon. And so, the Stanley Cup's probably not in the bulk of American newspapers this morning. And it's tough to stay relevant when, the main thing everybody's talking about isn't in the newspaper the next day. It's still a tremendous driver of readership and interest. And yeah, at the Richmond, we'll still have sports stories and particularly, people love high school sports stories and community sports stories, and college sports is as big as ever. It's got its problems right now, but it's certainly
is that more in markets like Richmond versus a DC or a Philly or New York?
Yeah, I know you do a lot of Terp stuff, but I think you would say on the whole, the Post is probably more emphasized national sports stories as opposed to like. They may have had a full-time Georgetown person a few years ago. I don't want to speak to their situation, but I think, they're more in how do we tell an interesting national story right now as opposed to how do we make sure to get to every George Mason basketball game.
Right. All right. Well, congratulations on your new gig. Best of luck. TheRichmonder.org. You can link to it by just following Michael on X at Michael P. in RVA. All right, let's talk some football team. And, this is the time of year. There's lists, there's rankings, there's, all this stuff coming out.
Yep.
But let me just ask you specifically your view on if Brandon Ayuk, and Adam Schefter yesterday reported that Washington and San Francisco had discussions. Washington decided not to, move forward with a deal. But what is your view of if Brandon Ayuk were available, should Washington be interested?
Well, I think Washington should be interested in that. I think the best thing you can do for Jaden Daniels is give him as many weapons and as many playmakers as possible. I don't think you can over accommodate a rookie quarterback in terms of getting him comfortable and getting him players he likes. I don't think the 49ers should be interested in a deal. You look at the 49ers, that's a team that's on the verge of a Super Bowl, and winning a Super Bowl, that's their only goal. What's better, having Brandon Ayuk for a year or a draft pick you have to wait an entire year to make? Unless they said send us Terry or something like that, I guess I'm just missing how the 49ers would stand to benefit by losing talent in an all-in year.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That's why I keep coming back to, there's no way they're trading a guy that is going to be a big part of another Super Bowl run. He was last year, and he would be this year. You're for what, a compensatory third rounder if you lose him in free agency, that would be if you lost him in free agency. But for a second rounder or a second and a fifth, no. You don't do that if you're the Niners. I guess the issue would be if he made it super uncomfortable for them, you know, when you get to training camp and he's a legitimate holdout. But we know that it just doesn't pay to be a holdout as a player in the NFL anymore. It gets incredibly expensive.
Chris Jones can vouch for that, right? They gave him that moral win of, like, we restructured his contract, but he ended up losing money off of that holdout. He did not win the holdout by any stretch. He missed some training camp, I guess, whatever that's worth to him. But in terms of actual financial impact, if you skip training camp, it adds up quickly, and it would add up quickly for Brandon Ayuk. And especially given how good that team's going to be, if he wanted out of Carolina or something like that, you know, maybe you've got a little more leverage. But have a great year, go to another Super Bowl, go to another NFC Championship game, and the market will be there for you. I think that the path to him getting paid is pretty simple, and it starts with him dominating.
So I asked Ben this yesterday. We're being joined, of course, by Michael Phillips. That, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but I haven't read one even mild criticism of Jaden Daniels in this offseason, right? You know, we've heard Jerod Mayo say about Drake May, long way to go. We heard some Caleb Williams struggles early on. Everything has been so complimentary, if not over the top complimentary. I mean, you know, Lewis Riddick went nuts the other day. I mean, I was reading some of the quotes from over the weekend on yesterday's show. And to me, that is coming from either the front office and the coaching staff because they want to get people excited about Jaden Daniels, which I would not love personally, or it's just that he really is this good and people can't contain themselves, because it's coming from players too. Terry was on with Scott the other night on SportsCenter, and you know he was talking about how incredibly mature and talented he is. Which of the two is it? Is it that we're hearing nothing but good because he really is all that, or it's because he's good, but they are trying to get everybody pumped up and, by the way, buy some tickets to games next year?
No, I think it's genuine. I mean, you look at the last Jaden negative story would have been the Topgolf story, right, with the agent.
Yeah, before the draft.
And certainly pre-draft, things are always said, and there's always those stories. Post-draft, I agree with you. It's all been positive. But, I mean, this is not a market and a situation where people hold back. You remember the year everybody was going to pump Robert up with positivity to – help him through it, and that lasted for like a minute and a half, until kind of the truth started coming out. I think this is a market where that's very hard to pull off. I think it's genuine. I think people really like what they've seen from the kid so far. I don't know how much that will translate on the field this year, but I know he's made a lot of friends in the building.
I agree with you, by the way. I just want to make that clear. I think that, and I'm a huge fan and was pre-draft and all season long, and want to be right about him, like we all want to be right about him. But I think it's genuine as well. So on this football team right now on June 25th, is there anything that you are confident that it will be in 2024? Like anything, a player, a position group, something related to the staff? Is there anything that you feel really good about?
I feel really good about the running backs. I think Austin Eckler was a great addition for what they're doing right now, which is not breaking the bank, but bringing in talent. I like Brian Robinson a lot. I think that's a strong position. On defense, I love the tackles. I'm very confident in the tackles, whether or not Johnny Newton plays. I think Fedarian Mathis is a very capable NFL number three, so you got three good ones right there. I feel really good that the linebacking play will improve. I may not be out on a limb there, though, Kevin, because it was so bad last year. I've bought myself a big area to land in on that leap for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think my thing has been just that they're going to be improved on defense, but that's not much of a leap because it would be hard for them to be any worse. Back to sort of, you know, the lists and the rankings time of the year. I mean, Pro Football Talk had him 29th. Yahoo had him 29th in their preseason power rankings. ESPN just came out ranking the rosters. They had it 30th. Do you have a reaction to that? I mean, first of all, there's two ways to look at it, right? You know, do you think they've earned that for the moment, but do you think that they'll end up being that?
I think the roster being ranked in that spot is fair because of what everybody put on tape last year, right? Like, you and I can talk, and I do believe this, that Benjamin St. Juice will take a step forward this year, and then, you know, name your guy, he'll do better this year. But if you're a national guy, you're not looking at glass half full scenarios for everybody. You're saying, what did they put on tape last year when I evaluate this team? And it's bad. It's tough to watch. Emmanuel Forbes, I think he'll be better this year. But I also understand if you're Pro Football Talk, you don't go watch everybody's tape and say, you know, what is he going to do with a year of improvement and great coaching? What's his upside? You say, what did he do last year? He didn't do anything last year. He was bad. He got burnt several times. So I think the roster prediction is justified. I don't know that the overall prediction is fair. I think this is probably, yeah, if you want to sell me on 20 to 25, I'm there. I think I can rattle off a few teams that have it worse than these guys, coming out of the gate here. And I do think the schedule is hard. I think that 1-3 is probably a very reasonable guess for how this team starts this year with that schedule. I love the matchup against Arizona. I hate flying out to Arizona on a short week after a Monday night road game against a team that's going to hand it to you probably. That's a bad setup right there. Tampa's not way better than them. I don't love having them in the opener. That's a team that, you know, has cohesion, and that generally pays off in a week one situation. Yep. I don't know that they were done a lot of favors.
Michael Phillips, a Jayhawk who has spent the professional portion of his life in the Commonwealth and has the Richmonder at therichmonder.org now as part of his professional output. Best of luck with it. I appreciate it as always.
I appreciate it. I'll be excited to see you up at camp soon.
Yep. Michael Phillips, everybody. We are done for the day. Thanks to him. Thanks to Doc. In talking about Butch McAdams, Derek Parker from Draft Digest joined us as well. Doc is in with Chris. They're up next.